and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. We are into week three of the college football season now. After a long affair on Saturday between Virginia and William and Mary, 55-16 was the final score in that one. A lot of points, mostly in the first half. That second half, I got to admit, kind of dragged a little bit, but I'm joined today by Brad Franklin from Cavs Corner. You all know him already. You follow him on Twitter. So, Brad, thanks for coming on again.
Very glad to be here, man.
I was had in my notes here. Let's see, what do we have last night? 45-45 what was that? Virginia Tech loses to Old Dominion.
45-20 something.
I'm sorry, I'm on the wrong game. I think a lot of people were still kind of more so enjoying that game on Saturday than the Virginia William and Mary game. I think I saw more tweets
from Virginia people,
fans.
Yeah.
About that one.
Yeah.
Did you catch any of it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, dude. I watched every, I wouldn't say every second, but I watched pretty much every second. Yeah. I have been of the opinion, and anybody out there, you can check my priors on this. I've been on the opinion that I did not think Tech was going to be any good. And everybody would be like, I don't know. They got so-and-so. I don't know. I think they're going to be pretty bad.
What is not pretty good? What is that?
I thought they'd be better than 0-3. Well, maybe I didn't. I thought they'd be 1-2 right now.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't think they'd be as anemic. And I did not think they would be as chaotic as they've been. But I've always thought that the pry hire I thought was an odd one. I never thought it would really work. I think that several months ago when they're looking for coordinators and they're having a problem, that's not a good sign. Yeah. When your AD goes in front of the board of visitors and is basically like crying poor, that's not a good sign. So I think that in the final analysis, this will be a very interesting next few weeks, because to this point, we have not had in the portal NIL era, we've not had coaches get fired before week four, which is the cutoff for red shirts, right? And, we've got transfer portal immediately for those kids for 30 days. So guys can conceivably, if they have a red shirt available, right, they can go ahead and red shirt now, even if they played all three games, they can get their next destination lined up, ready to go next semester, be ready to go in the spring. And then they're just basically finishing out, what classes they've got for now. It will be a fascinating few weeks. I could see a scenario, depending on how the like rev share deals are worded and stuff. You could see a scenario where a whole bunch of guys are gone and they have some trouble with fielding a team. Now, I don't know if it's going to be quite that drastic, but we are really in sort of like nobody knows what the dark side of the moon looks like territory here. So it should be interesting to say
that. That was the interesting part about all this, is now all this transfer kind of, the four game rule for redshirting and the transfer portal 30-day window opening. And it's interesting though, because I thought at the time when they hired Brent Pry, I actually kind of liked the hire just from a cultural fit. Obviously, on the field stuff as a first time head coach, there was a lot to prove there.
Right.
But I thought he got in there and he kind of got it. And that's kind of what they needed after Fuente, because Fuente was probably a better coach on the field than a guy that understood it. Like, he did not understand it whatsoever. And I think that's kind of what spelled doom for him there in the end. But he's had, Brent Pry's had somewhat success. I mean, you could still argue that Penn State's gobbling up all the recruits in Virginia, but he's had made inroads in the Virginia Beach, Hampton area and in Richmond. That's going to be interesting. I think that's going to be for anyone. This is a side tangent, but I think I'm going to go further into this whole Virginia football landscape later in the week on the next pod. But Brad, let's get into what people wanted to come here to listen about. Maybe that is what they wanted to hear.
Let me add this one quick note and then we can switch gears. The thing that I'm really curious about is, if you think about, just dear listener, dear viewer, Flip Brent Pry and Justin Fuente. Fuente had head coaching experience, right? But they tried to saddle him with like Beamer light, right? Remember, like they were going to have Bud coach the defense and it was still going to be Beamer ball on defense, but then Fuente was going to be new and fresh and different on offense. If you flip them and Pry comes in using Beamer's establishment, right? And then if that doesn't work out, you go to Fuente, who has head coaching. I think that's the thing that ultimately tripped up Brent Pry, is that he did not have the background of running a program the way that I think somebody needed to after everything that happened with Fuente, and especially in a new era. I think you needed somebody who understood what it's supposed to look like. So that'll be fascinating to watch as they get, go into deeper into this hiring process.
I mean, and hey, and on theme, Tony Elliott, that's something that he has had to
Yes.
learn as well. And I mean, I'm not going to say that this is a, mark up a win for Virginia or anything. I think there's a lot more to prove this season for Tony Elliott, but I mean, I don't know if, think about before last season, Virginia Tech was like the dark horse favorites to make the first college football playoff.
That's right.
And Virginia was, picked second to last in the ACC to end up at this point the next
Yeah.
year is kind of a wild spot to be in.
Absolutely.
All right, Brad, as I mentioned off the top, 55-16, Virginia beats William and Mary. A good day out all around. What was your one big take coming out of that game?
Man, I think it was just how it wasn't that long ago that these were tough games for UVA. And I think that, if I'm going to call a spade at this point, right? I do think that the transfer portal era has changed things for FCS type teams. Whereas used to be team like William & Mary, team like at that point JMU, what they would do is they would have guys who had been there either for a little while or guys with experience who had fallen back, right? And they would build something, right? Now, when you get that momentum, that guy bounces, right? He's gone to somewhere else with a better situation, a better payday, that kind of thing. So I think that one of the unintended or unexpected consequences of this is that some of the FCS teams are going to take it harder than others. Now, that being said, it wasn't that long ago that even the William & Mary teams that didn't have those types of players were still able to sort of hang around, if not give UVA a little heartburn. So the fact that this thing was over as fast as it was over, I think that's a really good sign. You're not going to convince many people that you're good because you beat William & Mary 55 to 16. But it's almost like the lack of the inverse is a step, right? The fact that it was not close, the fact that this thing was over as quickly as it started. I think in our take two, Justin writes that it was basically over when William and Mary got off the bus. And that I know that sounds harsh, but that has not always been the case. So for me, the
It's
one
not.
big takeaway was is that the talent differential, Virginia finally looked like the bigger, stronger, better team, and that has not always been the case in these matchups. And it was really good if you're a UVA observer to see that and watch it play out over the full game.
No, I mean, you stole the words out of my mouth. That's like on Twitter, I wrote, Virginia has played three FCS teams under Tony Elliott. They have won by 17, 14, and 14 for, average of 15 points. They were up by at one point by 40 plus in this game. Like, this is how good teams handle business
This is
against
what it looks
teams
like.
like FCS
Totally
teams.
agree. Yeah,
And
totally
same thing
agree.
in the opener against Coastal. Everyone wanted to kind of like, oh, it's Coastal, they're not good. Oh, it's William and Mary, they're not good. I'm like, well, this is what good teams go do. They go out there and they smash them. They get their starters in there before halftime. I made a joke at one point, like Chandler Morris was going hurry up offense, and I was like, he's trying to get out of this game before halftime. Like, he's like, if I can get to 42 points or whatever, like, I'm out of here. I don't have to play anymore.
You know what's crazy is at this point in the season for Virginia to be averaging as many points as the Cavaliers are, but Chandler Morris, I think, only has like three throws over 20 yards or something like that, three completions over 20 yards. The fact that they have been able to be so successful and so consistent with so much of it based on the ground. And yes, I understand two of these games are against Coastal and William & Mary. I understand that. But one of these games is also against an NC State defense, right? And it was on the road, that kind of stuff. So I think that as we go forward, again, the fact that Virginia had the bigger, stronger, more physical team, and easily more talented, though talent has not necessarily always been the problem. It's execution. I think they executed a high level. I'm really curious to see as we go forward how real this offensive line really is, because as of yet, at this to this point, I mean, they're pretty real. Considering the injuries they've had at right tackle, and considering all of these pieces were basically sort of thrown together in the not too distant past. I mean, it's pretty impressive that they have not needed Chandler Morris to be anything more than the game manager that he's been, right? Granted, they have definitely leaned on him at times to get the ball downfield, and he has performed pretty well. Outside of like really one throw against NC State, he's been very good this season, but they haven't needed him to be anything more than that. For the Cavaliers to have, a couple of 100-yard rushers for the first time, what? for the first time in 3 seasons at all, but the first time for running backs in a decade, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty good, right? And we'll see what the next few weeks bring in terms of willing, basically to tell us how good it actually is.
You touched on like my against the grain thought in my head. I was like, I mean, Chandler Morris hasn't like had to like blow
No.
up at all yet. Like the receipt, like Cam Ross had 0 catches.
Yeah.
He probably should have had one that hit him right in the numbers for
Yeah,
that fourth down
it did.
conversion.
Yeah.
Edgerrin
Although
didn't
there was
do
a holding
much.
penalty on that call anyway, so it would have come
Yeah,
back. But
yeah.
yeah, you're right. You're right. He should have brought that home.
And then Edgerrin had a couple catches and Terrell Harris had a couple catches, but those are like at the beginning of the game. Like we haven't gotten to see that passing game really
No.
take off yet. And like I feel like when Virginia can run the ball like this, it feels like Des Kitching's like it's like running downhill for him. Like last year against Coastal Carolina, or this past week, it's like, oh, we're like getting like 10 yards of carry. Let's just keep it going. Like it doesn't
Yeah.
matter who's in there.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, our who's on player of the game. I had a couple different options in this week because there was a lot of different guys that played. It was weird. I don't know if you just kind of had this moment post game. It was like, yeah, backup quarterback Daniel Kalen's coming in. Backup wide receiver Cam Courtney's coming in. Third string running back Harrison Whaley's coming in. Like I'm
Yeah.
like, who are we talking to today? But
Right, yeah.
that's just
Yeah.
kind of how it went. But our player of the game, obviously Harrison Whaley, 10
Yeah.
carries, 151 yards, 3 touchdowns, tied for the 10th most nationally this week with
Yeah.
151 yards, third most in the ACC. Obviously the big one. I didn't even have a doubt in my mind what the run was that he broke. 97-yard run set the record for the longest in school history. I
Yeah.
vividly remember that Mikkel Simpson
Yep.
96-yarder in the Gator Bowl
Yeah.
against Texas Tech. Brad, where were you that day?
Oh man, I was not at the Gator Bowl though. I wish I had been. And it's funny though because like not only that, but then you've got the 700 yards for, and so
Yeah.
you think about sort of being able to break records that have in one case stood for, 50 plus years, and another case, I mean, 96 yards is a haul, right? 97, I mean, and like there was no doubt. I mean, and I understand again, we're talking about a team playing William and Mary. So I'm not trying to pile on here, and I'm not trying to make anybody out to be superheroes, but like I don't care who you're playing. That kid had hit a gear I didn't know he had. And for him to, as Tony Elliott talked about in the press conference, right? For him to not get a carry in Raleigh, to come back the next week and do that and be as consistent as he was, I think says a lot about him and a lot about sort of the culture that seems to be among these players. One thing that you mentioned, Cam Courtney, like one of the things he said when we talked to him was that, he's never been around a team that was this close, that was this sort of unselfish. And I think, you watch that the number of guys, whether it's Jamari Taylor, whether it's Xavier Brown, whether it's Noah Vaughn, and whether it's Wade, like they don't seem to care who is getting the shine and who's not. As Cam said, we all eat, right? And I thought that he was a perfect example of that, considering he was not involved in the game in Raleigh, and then he steps in and he looks like he's been there all season, right? I just thought that his production, his balance, I thought he showed not just a burst, but then also, he had some straight line speed, like I said, that I didn't realize that was a part of his game, right? It's the whole Shaq gif, like I wasn't, I apologize, young fella, I wasn't familiar with your game. I just was really impressed by him, and it looks like Noah Vaughn, that right ankle looks a little bit iffy. He was back on crutches and with a boot on. So we'll, and it's funny to say that the third string running back. But I mean, Noah was really pushing for carries. I mean, he
And
hits the
not just this
hole.
game, the
Yeah, exactly.
previous
All
three
season
games,
long,
he's had
right?
big carries.
And so he was, I mean, but then you just think about Virginia, which has really struggled in recent seasons to get a consistent running game, reliable running game, for them to have four backs. They were so the backfield was so full that the guy who ran for this longest run in school history couldn't even get a carry in Raleigh, right?
Yeah.
I think that just again goes to show the way that Virginia put resources into this roster, and it has definitely proven fruitful. Now, they're not hanging 100 points on everybody, but man, when you're able to dominate the line of scrimmage the way Virginia has at times this season, and to keep your quarterback clean, right? That's a really good sign for this offensive line, and the fact that he's the guy who gets the kind of player of the game nod here. I think it says a lot about the depth of this team and certainly the ability on this roster.
I have to give credit where credit is due. Greg Mejia, our friend for the Daily Progress, said before the season, his under the radar guy was Harrison Whaley. He said at some point this season they're going to need Harrison Whaley. I don't know if they needed him against William & Mary, but he certainly helped himself. And he actually is the one that tuned me onto him when they got him in the transfer portal. I was like, oh, he's got like decent numbers at his previous two stops, but he's been injured and kind of banged up, whatever. But he was like, go watch that Texas game. I don't know if you've seen it. He had a 70-yard touchdown run against
No, I haven't seen
Texas
it.
where it showed that same kind of burst. You're like, I didn't know he had that. I was like, I've seen that one time
One
before
time.
from him, and that was that Texas run. And I think he even said post-game, he was like, yeah, that's probably still my favorite run because it was like Texas, you know? We've seen it before. And yeah, like you said, just to have a guy like that in your treasure trove of running backs coming off the bench. And like the thing I keep coming back with the running backs, we'll touch on it now since we're talking about all the backs. You know, Jamari Taylor, obviously, he's kind of been that RB1 that Virginia hasn't had in a while, kind of the guy that you can rely on. Xavier Brown's still a really good running back, and we just haven't seen him that much this season because they haven't needed him in a lot of spots. Noah Vaughn, like you said, every time he touched the ball, I have a tweet that I did all the time last season, like, good things happen when Xavier Brown touches the ball. I think I have gifted that now to Noah Vaughn. We'll see if he, obviously, we'll see what the injury looks like, but every time he has touched the ball this year, something good has happened. And then Harrison Whaley goes off for 151 yards. And I said at one point in the press box, I was like, you know, he's going to mess around and get ACC running back of the week going
He
for 10
might.
carries, 151 yards. This
He
is
might.
obviously recorded before those awards are handed out. So forgive us if he does not.
If he didn't, but if he did, Preston's a soothsayer over here.
A couple other stats on the running backs while we're here. First time UVA had 150 plus yard rushers in back-to-back weeks since 2004. You want to take a stab?
Oh, man, 2004. Was that Wally Lundy? Was that too early for
That's who I was
Lundy?
expecting, yeah, but it was not.
2004. Perriman?
Yeah, Alvin Pierman.
Who was the other one?
It was Pierman back-to-back weeks, so I'll
Oh,
just
okay.
give you
Well, then, hey, I'll take it. All
that.
right, good.
Yeah, it was him back-to-back weeks. I don't know why. I
That's
always think of him
crazy.
as the receiver. I never think about some of the yards that he got, especially in that 2004 season. Couple other running back notes. First time two UVA running backs rush for 100 plus yards in the same game since 2013.
Yeah,
Danielle
it's
Hamm and
crazy.
Kevin Parks. I feel like the past couple weeks with some of these records they're breaking on offense, I get to go back through a lot of UVA history. I don't remember anyone from the 1968 team that
No.
played Davidson, so I'm sorry about that, but
I think it
some
was
of these
Frank Quayle
2000s.
and Arnett, right? I think somebody checked me on that, but I think that's who it
Okay.
was. I think, but I not because I
That would
just
make
know that. I
sense.
heard
Yeah.
that somewhere.
Okay.
I
That
did
would make
I promise I
sense.
didn't just know that.
All right, let's get into the UVA offense now. We mentioned the record, and I want to talk about Des Kitchings, who actually was our runner-up in our Player of the Game poll. I had to put him in there. Like, respect where it's due. School record 700 total yards. Obviously, that tops the previous record of 691 yards set back in 1968, 57 years ago against Davidson. That was probably the most fun that we had in the second half was, you know, I think they were like 3 yards away from it, and they were about to punt the ball. Ball goes over the punter's head. That's negative 23 yards, but then they added the
Then
23
they added it
yards
back,
back,
then took it away.
and then they took it away after they announced the record. They're like, okay, no, we're in the clear now. You can take the yards away. I don't even know, like, do those yards count like on special teams? I don't know anything, but they set that record. And if I had told you, and many UVA fans, Brett, I had you on right after that Virginia Tech loss last year. If I had told you then, Des Kitchings is going to be the offensive coordinator that sets the school record for total offense in a game, like, what would your reaction been?
I mean, at that point, man, I would have been somewhat surprised that he was still the OC. And I know that sounds bad. I don't mean it that way. I think one of the things that is fascinating about Des is that over the last few seasons, you have seen moments. There have been just very clear times where, I mean, he is dealing, right? And then something goes awry, and you couldn't necessarily be sure what. And it's hard not to just point to the top, right? To point to Tony or point to Des, right? I think in hindsight, some of what, especially last season, some of what I think maybe was dysfunctional about the offense wasn't necessarily what the plays were being called. I think a lot of it was much more about execution on the field. When I mentioned earlier about the resources they put into this roster, I think one of the things that we can't lose sight of is this, you're not just getting talented guys. A lot of these dudes have time in systems, right? And so they are used to being expected to do these types of things. Now, maybe some of the playbook is different, the terminology is different, maybe some of the tendencies and things of that nature are different. But at its most basic level, they have been able to show a very high level of not just sort of appreciation for, but execution of what they're been at, being asked to do. And I think Dez has done a really nice job of this year. It's not just what he's called, it's how he's fitting the pieces together with the things he's asking different guys to do. There have been countless times over the last few years, right, where you knew before the ball got snapped where they wanted it to go, right? And you didn't necessarily need to be a defensive coordinator or a defensive analyst who was doing nothing but watching film. You could just watch them every week in the press box,
It could
right?
be us.
You knew when Chris Tyree was here and he went in motion, like, yep, they're gonna try to force him the ball. They're not doing any of that this year. They have so many different pieces, and the way that they fit and the way the skill sets overlap, this is a perfect example of, they put resources into a roster, and clearly the staff knows what they want to do with that. Now, if it continues to be as successful, that's going to be great for the team. But to this point, you really have to have your hat take your hat off to Dez, because it's kind of impossible in this day and age to get this many, players and keep them happy. Think about just the receivers they have, right? We just spent a lot of time talking about four running backs that easily, were good enough to give a bunch of carries, right? But as I mentioned from what Cam Courtney said after the game about sort of the unselfishness of the guys and the way that everybody's just really excited for everyone, that it's not this versus that and stuff. I think that is as probably as indicative of a job well done for Dez and stuff as the 700 yards is. Now, what's crazy about the 700 yards, man, is that they easily could have got so many more,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
That whole fourth quarter, they're basically doing nothing but running the clock out. And to the point of like, so I think Greg was saying somebody, I don't know who, what team he was saying it did it, but basically somebody's taking knees on first, second, and third down just, to get to the punt. And I mean, yes, that does seem rather disrespectful, but I think that the 700 is crazy just because it basically did it in three quarters. And again, I don't care who you're playing. That's a whole lot of yards. And I'm really impressed by the way Dez has been able to do all the things he's been able to do.
I said, and I was on record last week, that I thought the game against NC State was the best game that he had called as an offensive coordinator for Virginia. I would still stand by that, because obviously you only got to see half of what he got to do. Like, he didn't really have to dig too far into the bag of tricks. I did like there were some interesting formations. That one that they had down on the goal line where you had the three across and like Chandler Morris was lined up behind Jamari Taylor, like some interesting little, pieces that he's been working on this year as they're trying to get better in the red zone. And obviously the third downs have been great this year. And the really interesting thing, because you talked about how do you involve all these different pieces, that Cam Courtney touchdown run, that was his play. That was Cam Courtney's play. Like Tony Elliott said after the game, like, Cam Courtney is the best end around receiver that we have. Like, I love that it's that specific. Like, we know that you have this great trait and we're going to use it to your best of your ability. And like, you're seeing like, and this is the thing. I did a feature on Dez Kitchens before the season, because I thought obviously there's a lot of focus on him going into this year. Outside of Tony Elliott, probably the most focus was on him.
Easily, yeah.
And he was saying that, this year with the pieces in place now, the offensive line kind of takes the governor off. Now that you've improved the offensive line, you can do a little bit more. And now it's mismatch hunting. And that like speaks to me as like an NBA fan. I'm watching the NBA playoffs. Like, it's all about mismatches. LeBron's calling the screen up here. Let me get, this small little
You're trying
point
to get
guard
the
on me.
rotations like you want them.
And that's exactly what you're seeing right now with Dez, as far as getting the right personnel into the right spots against against whatever the defense is throwing at you.
And what I thought, and again, this is going to sound funny, but I do think that if you watched, certainly if you watched Tony's offenses at Clemson, and I've said this at various places over the last few years, but I think I was, I won't say for anybody else, but I'll just say for myself. I thought when they brought this over that there would be a lot more H-back stuff, a lot more moving the pieces in terms of the H-back tight end, that kind of thing. They certainly have tapped into that at times, but by and large, it's been really a little different than I expected it to be. They've got some elements of tempo this year, which has been interesting. And I think they're starting to, they're using the tight end a little bit more differently. And they didn't have Sae Gennis in this game. Now, Dak Twitty is a very interesting piece for them because he's basically a wide receiver in a quasi tight end body. And I think some of the mismatches, to your point, that you can really put teams in a tight bind if you're asking them to try to defend, Cam Ross and Jamal Edgerrin and Terrell Harris, and then you've got Sae Gennis or Dak Twitty, especially there, right? So I think one of the things that one of the challenges I think that Dez has going forward is we mentioned the running game is where it is. The offensive line has played just so well. And again, considering the injuries they've had at right tackle, that's super impressive. But then
Real quick,
beyond that,
because you brought that up, I was standing there pregame and lined up in front of me were Monroe Mills, Mecalen Thomas, David Walaba, and Wallace Unamba. And I was like, it looks like a graveyard of Virginia right tackles, just like all standing there on the crutches, the scooters, whatever. But that speaks to what you're saying. Like, they have overcome all that to have a good offensive line still.
And it wasn't that long ago that Virginia would have a injury on the offensive line, and the entire line was
Brian
just
Stevens last year.
exactly right. Now, again, the offensive line is only as good as, its last game, right? So, like, in a lot of ways, it's one of those thankless things where, like, if the next game they struggle, no one will remember the production they had the first 3 weeks. But again, I think Dez's challenge is to get even more out of the passing game, right? And certainly the running backs have done just a super, admirable job of not just being able to produce, but to turn short runs into long gains, touchdowns, right? The hitting home runs aspect of this offense from on the ground, that is not a thing we're used to. Certainly in the Brennan Armstrong days, we saw, certainly at times with Anthony Calandria, we saw push the ball downfield, see what you can get. And sometimes, you pull rabbits out of hats, and sometimes, that thing gets picked off. The number of third and shorts, fourth and shorts that they've turned into huge gains or even points, down the field. If that kind of thing continues, think about just the stress that that takes off of an offense, right? I think those plays in and of themselves, if they're able to continue, you mentioned the third down thing, to be as good as they've been on third down and to continue to do that, I think that really does bode well for them, especially considering some of the things you want to see as offenses just sort of continue to gel and teams continue to gel. I'm really excited about what this offense can do because to the first three games, it's been super impressive, and I understand why the guys had him up on their shoulders yesterday.
Virginia's second in the country with 11 third down conversions per game right now. That was a weakness for them last year. I'm sure they would like to do a little bit. I think Des Kitchens joked, I would like to do a little bit better on first and second down so we don't have as many third downs. But offenses look great. I did want to give just a little more stats and kind of context to the offensive line. Obviously, 379 rushing yards that game. That's the second most since 1998 when they set the school record. Obviously, a little bit more than that was Coastal Carolina last year. But I think actually, if they hadn't taken those knees, and I think we need to talk about Cole Gear and how far he goes back on the kneels. Like, just go down right there. Like, you don't need
That's
to.
right.
I think he like took off 3 yards in the first one. And then the big one is they have not allowed a sack in three games. It's the first time since 2011 they haven't done that. And they're one of eight teams nationally that doesn't have a sack allowed. That is crazy because last year they actually put up some record. They don't officially keep school records for how many
No
sacks you
sacks
give up
allowed.
in a season, but I'm pretty sure they set the school record last
Whatever it
year.
was,
That's, yeah, whatever it was. Let's get to the defense. Not a lot of notes, and I kind of came into this being like, I don't think there's many things that you could take away from the defense in a game like this. But I was sitting there, I think we were kind of getting into the second quarter, and I was like, they really need some splash plays. Like, they need some sacks, they need some big tackles for loss, an interception, a fumble. You got three sacks by the end of the game. Dan Rickard almost had a big splash play
Yeah, he
there
did.
with the Zion Williamson rip the ball out of a guy's hands and just run the other way. Obviously that they called that play dead there, but only allowed 56 yards rushing, had the three sacks, no turnovers created though, and they gave up five big pass plays. I mean, overall, like, was there anything that you could take away from the defense?
I think that, you know, kind of like we were talking about with the offense of the just the general idea of being the bigger, more physical team. I think that's important, right? I think in this game, the fact that Virginia did what it was supposed to do, really, I think other than one busted coverage on that 79-yard touchdown, where Platt and Charles, I think, you know, there's some miscommunication about who's doing what. Other than that one play, but I mean, like, even still, I mean, one play, right? I think my problem is, you know, to your point, right? Chaos in the backfield. They're not creating many TFLs. They're not creating many sacks. They've been solid. They also don't have their best player, right? And I think you can make a pretty compelling argument that if Cam Robinson is healthy and plays in Raleigh, maybe that's a different outcome, right? He changes the game enough, right? He's going to make a handful of plays a game that many people are just not going to make. In a game like yesterday, you don't really need him to do all that, right? So I think this is another one of those, like, you're not going to, it's, I always go back to this example, but it just makes perfect sense in my political science brain. Yard signs don't win campaigns, but the lack of people having yard signs is a really bad sign, right? You're not going to win the ACC. You're not going to go to the postseason because you beat up on William & Mary. But if you don't beat up on William & Mary, you're definitely not doing any of those things, right? So I think the lack of the inverse is in of itself a positive. And so I think for the defense in this game, you know, look, 16 points, that's great, right? And given what the offense has given them, I think, you know, after they kind of righted the ship a little bit in that fourth quarter and Carter Finley, now I think all of us expect Cam Robinson to be back probably this week. And I'm really curious to see what Tony Elliott says Tuesday when we get to the presser. He warmed up on Saturday. He did not look like he was like, he didn't look like he was going like full go, but he did not seem limited. He was still taking contact on both shoulders. He looked normal. So I think he's probably going to go.
To
And if
get
that's the case, we'll wait and see.
to give some context, this is something in the Tony Elliott era that they like to do with a player when they're coming back from injury. You'll almost always see them warm up the game before, whether it's on the home or on the road. I remember Malachi Fields, their first season when he was coming back, he warmed up against UNC. Did not see a snap on the field. I don't even think he wore his uniform for the game, and then came back the next week against Pitt. So I think Cam Robinson and Antonio Clary, who also warmed up in that game, we'll see what he kind of gives you. But I think that's kind of an indication that, all right, let's warm up this week. Let's get out there, kind of go through the game day experience, and then you're not going to play. You don't need to play against William and Mary. That's the same reason Sage Innes didn't play, because we all talked to him earlier this week, and then obviously he didn't play. So I fully expect to see Cam Robinson back. That's been the timeline since kind of the injury first happened that I was hearing, and then Tony Elliott said it, and he's continued with it. So Stanford next week seems like we're going to see Cam Robinson. Maybe we see Antonio Clary. I'm a little, you know, I'm interested to see kind of where he's at. And I thought the way Ethan Minter had started the season, maybe you could, you know, take a little bit more time getting him back. And maybe, you know, maybe he doesn't have to play like a starter snap level. Like maybe he can mix him in there and just give him a few snaps. Like I think Jameer Carter in that first game only played 17 snaps. Like they have the depth now in a lot of different
That's
spots
right.
to do that. So yeah, defense should get a little bit of facelift going forward. And like you said, I mean, it was 42-7 when the first team defense was out there, and they just had that one play where I think that was like might have been one of I think that was Christian Charles' first snap out there at safety. And so, yeah, a little miscommunication there, and that happens. Five big pass plays given up, and only one of those came against the first team defense. So, again, just not a whole lot that you can take away from anything there. Brad, any other final thoughts on the William & Mary game before we look ahead?
You know, I think that you know, I asked Tony after I guess it was, you know, middle to end of the presser about Daniel Sparks, and it looked like he sort of clipped the ground a little bit on that first kickoff. And you know, he came up a little bit lame. It was easily the worst kickoff he has had all season. He was on the bike. He was trying, you know, and so I didn't expect him to come back. But that's a sneaky injury. You know, if it's a hip or a groin, you know, whatever it might be, that's going to be one to watch. Maybe not necessarily against Stanford, but that, I mean, he's been a weapon for them in a variety of ways, right? And special teams has been, you know, pretty steady as she goes. And so, you know, as much as you're going to pay attention to offense and defense, right? Special teams is also super important, and we have seen Virginia special teams that have, you know, been the difference between wins and losses, right? And so I feel like, you know,
Yeah,
it
both
would be
good and
really
bad.
nice to, exactly. It would be a really good sign for him to play against Stanford and be fine. So we'll see what the next week brings for him. But overall, I mean, like I said, it's the kind of expected conclusion you hoped we would see, and the fact that there was zero stress. That they rolled, first teamers able to get out. That's exactly what you want out of a game like that. And now you turn your attention to conference play for real.
Yeah, Sparks is an interesting one too, because he plays a lot of different roles. He's also the
Yeah,
holder. I
he's a
saw
holder.
late in the game, Will Bettridge was kind of messing around with being the holder. Obviously, he can't hold for himself, but I think that was just like a backup situation. Like, but yeah, I don't know. Kind of, yeah, that's not a guy that you want to lose, obviously, because of what he adds as a punter and on kickoffs, but also kind of throws some other things into question. All right, looking ahead, Stanford ACC opener next week. I know it's shocking. They haven't played the ACC opener yet. They played NC State, but they have not played an ACC game. So ACC opener on ACC Network at 7:30 p.m. at Scott Stadium next week. Night game, and I just still can't kind of wrap my head around this. I knew this going into it, but these two schools have never played each other
I
before.
did not know that until I read your rundown for this.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I was like, is that there's no way he included that if it's not that blows my mind that they've never
Yeah.
played.
I
That's
was
crazy.
scanning up and down the UVA record book, and I'm like, am I missing something? They played St. John's, who I don't even think has a football team anymore, but they have not played Stanford. You know, these
Apparently not.
two non-Ivy League schools that, you know, kind of, and that's the thing. Like when Stanford was doing well, they're like, well, why can't Virginia be like Stanford? And when, you know, Virginia does well, Stanford's like, well, why can't we
Well,
be
why
like
can't you?
Virginia? Yeah, exactly. Like it just goes back and forth. Now we actually see these two schools play. Stanford, interesting spot for them. They lost the opener at Hawaii, which is a game a lot of people watch because that was the only college football game on. And then they lose at BYU too. They returned home and they lost and they won their ACC opener against Boston College last week, which is a little bit of a surprise, but is also a reason that down the road I'm a little nervous about Cal when Virginia goes out there because I'm like, Boston College was the better team than Stanford, but they went out there and they lost. That, you know, West Coast trip is not to be trifled with. But Stanford thoughts overall, just like, what are you looking for in this matchup?
Well, you know, I think in a lot of ways, you know, it is a home game. It's a night game, which I did not expect either. I think for Virginia, you sort of just want it to be, as I said before, steady as she goes, right? You want to be out, you know, maybe you're not going to put 55 on the board, and maybe you're not going to get the starters out by the middle of the second quarter. But I think you want to be able to do what you can do. You want to be able to go out there and play your game. There's nothing about Stanford. I mean, unless, you know, Andrew Luck is going to throw on a jersey. There's nothing about Stanford that necessarily I think causes Virginia many problems. Doesn't give me any heartburn. I think really to me, this game is about it. Can Virginia be the Virginia we've seen this season, right? Can they still be good on third down? Can they keep the quarterback clean? And then are they able to do some things on the defensive side that maybe they haven't done as much of, right? Can they get after the quarterback? Can they create some negative plays? You know, I would love to see Virginia get to a place where, you know, especially if, you know, Cam Robinson's back, even if you're going to get him back in this game, you're not going to get him back at full strength, right? He's not going to pull the kind of snaps in his first game back that you might hope he would pull. But his high watermark is pretty high, and he is surrounded by more talent when he plays this season than he has had at any point in his Virginia career thus far, right? So I'm really curious to see sort of how Virginia's defense can involve him in a way, and what does it mean for them? Is that the extra little push that they need to be able to create a few plays here and there? Because as we've seen from the offense, like the offense doesn't really need the defense to do like a Herculean sort of thing, right? Really what they need them to be is just kind of steady as they go. And I think offensively, you know, I'm of the mind that everything we've seen, maybe some of what we saw in Raleigh was special, so to speak, right? But pretty much everything you saw against Coastal and you saw against William & Mary, that's all base stuff, right? You're going to start getting into the places now where they've been game planning. Certainly, it's good if you're a Stanford fan to see them kind of come off the mat a little bit, beat BC. I'm not entirely sure how good BC really is or isn't. And that's one of the downsides of early in the season sometimes, right? You're not really sure even what you've got because you've got so many schools have so many new pieces and so many different pieces, right? Guys doing different things or new guys doing stuff. So I think like this is a place I think where that the game to me is much more about Virginia, right? In order for Stanford to come in there, I mean, I think it's a 14.5 point line right now. in order for Stanford to win this thing, Virginia's got to make a lot of mistakes that Virginia has not made so far this season.
It really depends where you look. I've seen 17 points, 16 and a half, like very heavy Virginia, which is I don't remember the last
No,
time
it's been a
against a
while.
Power Four opponent that they have been that big of a favorite.
Yeah.
Big things with Stanford. You mentioned, can they get after the quarterback? Stanford's middle of the pack in the country as far as how many sacks they allowed. So this will be a big game for the defense. Plus, it's also going to test Micah Love is actually their running back, and he actually ran for the most yards in the ACC last week in that game. So he's actually a pretty decent running back. If you had to look for a bright spot on that Stanford team, he's probably it right there. And so, Frank Reich, if he wants to just hand the ball off, can Virginia kind of find those better run fits that was missing against NC State? But they found against William and Mary, but not, obviously not the same level. And this is what I was saying ever since that NC State game. Like, you have a nice soft landing with William and Mary, and then you kind of get to up it a little bit to go to Stanford before you get to Florida State coming into town for that Friday night affair, which is going to be, I mean, I don't know about you. I've had that highlighted on my calendar ever since that schedule came out, but should be an interesting one. Again, you would expect Virginia has got to find a way to come out 3-1 going into that Florida State game. I know people wanted the undefeated going into it, but I think you'll take 3-1 at this point.
For sure. I would also say that, again, this is no disrespect intended at Stanford, but this is not a Stanford team that you lose a home game against.
No.
And one of the things I think as we learned after last year is it starts only matter if you finish well. But you only really give yourself a chance to finish well if you start well. And so I feel like, it's a weird dichotomy. But in the what I would like to call the Terry Heffernan revenge game, the Virginia's going to be the better team. It's a question of whether or not they execute like the better team. I think they're the more talented team. I think they're the team that has its stuff together the most. It should be a two-score game. If it's less than that, hey, that's not the end of the world, but this should not be tight. I think Virginia should win this thing and win it pretty easily. The question is going to be, to your point, what kind of step up, what does that mean for them as they go forward? But you can't overlook them, and obviously you got to go out there and execute. And I think that's one of the nice things about having so many older guys who've played a lot of college football, who sort of get it, and things seem to be working right now. They haven't hit a lot of adversity yet, right? So we'll have to wait and see when that happens. I mean, yeah, I know they were kind of nip tuck in Raleigh, but they kind of had a chance to win it until the end,
Sure.
right? They didn't really get like down and have to, figure it out in like the first half, that kind of thing. They were able to sort of keep kind of it was kind of like a back and forth thing. So this is one of those times where I think if you're a Virginia fan, you're looking at this, you're like, all right, they should beat Stanford. Florida State's a different animal altogether, but certainly as you go forward, you're just hoping it can to be the team you've been consistently. And so far this season, Virginia's been pretty dang good.
Yeah, absolutely. Is Terry Heffernan or Drake Metcalf, or both?
At
I mean,
both.
honestly, when I hear Drake Metcalf talk, it might as well be Terry Heffernan. Like, they sound exactly alike. So the Heffernan Metcalf revenge game against Stanford
There
coming
you
to
go.
Charlottesville next week. Brad, thank you so much for coming on the Who's On podcast today. It's good catching up and talking through this game and a lot of stuff going on in college football.
Sounds good, man. We'll see you at the stadium here soon.
Yeah, they will do it. All right, that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. Remember, you can subscribe to our new YouTube channel. Also, like the videos and leave a comment there. We will respond if you do. And also, as always, leave a 5-star review, follow, subscribe, whatever you have to do on Apple and Spotify. We will see you later in the week here on the Who's On podcast.